Right. We're going to learn a summary, so to speak, and some points and some ideas of a sicha of the Rebbe, of a talk of the Rebbe regarding justice and Bnei Noach. The truth is, this talk actually was delivered, was delivered in 1965, Parshas Vayishlach, 1965. I'll try to make a summary, but the truth is, I'm relying upon the fact that you read already the content, probably more than once, because it's a, so to speak, difficult content, in the sense that back and forth and ideas and opinions, and sometimes people are not so used to learn like this. People are more used to learn, like in university, you learn one idea, one book, one thing, and suddenly another book, another thing. But here, over here, everything is mixed up. So I'll try my best to be as clear as possible and to bring out the main points. As I was saying before, this was delivered in 1965. Of course, I wasn't there, so I did not hear it myself. I cannot say what the Rebbe had in mind when sharing these ideas. I don't know. That's the truth. I don't know. And without getting into details, because it's going to be too long of an introduction, but the way this book works, actually, Likutei Sichot, is that certain group of rabbis, huge minds, had the talks and the literal words of the Rebbe, and then they made up a text with notes and everything, and they presented it to the Rebbe. The Rebbe corrected, put notes back and forth, putting text in and out and so on, changing things, and then they published it as the words of the Rebbe. And it's known, it's a very known fact, that when you talk, you don't really write the same way you talk. When you talk, you repeat things and you say, and then when you write, you don't say, you just write it differently. So this is not exactly 100% what the Rebbe said in that particular meeting, rather what a group of people wrote, and the Rebbe checked it out, put notes and back and forth and so on, and then they print it. Why am I saying all of this? Because it's important to understand that sometimes in this type of texts, we don't really know what's behind the text. Why did the Rebbe start talking about this? We will see briefly an explanation on a parsha that I'm not going to go into that. That's why, again, I'm relying on the fact that you read already the text. But I'm not going to go into that particular part of the text. Maybe the Rebbe wasn't even talking about that, and they just put it on afterwards. So let's move on and let's see how this goes. First of all, a little bit of story to understand what we're talking about, what we're learning. The story is in Parshas Vayishlach. Parshas Vayishlach is one of the parshas, in one of the sections of the Torah, in the first book of the Torah. And basically, one of the stories over there is Shechem. This is the name of a city and also the name of a person. This person abducted and violated Dina. Dina was a daughter of Yaakov. I'm really jumping many, many things on the story. That's not, today is not a story class. So whatever, I rely on that you know what I'm talking about. So he abducted, violated Dina, and Shimon and Levi, two of the brothers of Dina, were so angry, like really, really so angry. What did they do? They told the people of the city of Shechem to circumcise. So everybody gets together, we get married with you, you get married with us, we're going to live together, everything is going to be fine. And in the third day after their circumcision, of course, all men were like hurting, you know. So they entered the city and they killed everybody, including Shechem. And they got back Dina, their sister. Now, the truth is that when they came back, and Yaakov, the father of Dina and Shimon and Levi, heard what happened, he found out he wasn't happy at all, to the point that he was very angry, actually, at Shimon and Levi. Why did you do this? Now everybody's going to come wage war against me. This is not a good thing, etc. One of the ideas of why Yaakov was so angry is because they didn't actually consult Yaakov what to do. They just went on and did things. And the truth is, and I'm not going to go into the detail of this, but the truth is that Shimon and Levi had 13 years old. 13, 1-3, boys, little boys. And they went and whatever, they killed a whole bunch of people, they recovered Dina. So it's a weird story, so to speak, weird story. Now, again, Yaakov was angry because they didn't talk to him, they didn't say anything to him. Different explanation. The Rebbe offers basically two explanations of why Yaakov was angry. One explanation is because Yaakov didn't want to kill everybody else because it's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration, profanation, whatever, of the name of God. It doesn't sound so well. Yeah, what did the Jews do? The Jews killed everybody. Whoa, this is weird people. So Yaakov wasn't so happy about this. Another explanation of why Yaakov wasn't happy, we see this in the text of the verses themselves, that we're not going into the details, because they should have spoken to him, ask him permission. Tati, can we go kill everybody? Yeah, go, or not, whatever. But they didn't do that. They just went. So Yaakov wasn't so happy. The most puzzling piece of information that I'm going to finish with this, the story, is that God was actually happy. God approved of what they did. How do you know that? Because the Midrash says, our sages explain, that even though there were a lot of people in the city of Shechem, and here we have only two boys, 13-year-old boys, Shimon and Levi, killing everybody with a sword, you know, with the whole thing, killing everybody, in the eyes of God, it was just like one person. So easy, like easy peace. They just did it, and that's fine. God helped them. So over here already, we have a whole weird, really strange picture. Yaakov is angry. He doesn't like this. But God is, so to speak, happy, whatever. And the word happy is not the best, but he approved. He helped. So we have to understand what's going on over here. And furthermore, again, what's going on with this idea of not consulting Yaakov, which is one of the explanations of why Yaakov was angry. Why should they consult? Wait a second. Do non-Jews, because after all, Shimon, Levi, Dina, Shechem, Yaakov, they were all non-Jews. There was no such a thing as Jews at that time in history. So did they have to honor Yaakov or not? Shimon and Levi, the children of Yaakov. Where do you see that non-Jews have to honor and respect the parents? Where do you see that? It doesn't appear. And if you go to the list of seven commandments of Bnei Noach, which are so famous, don't steal, don't kill, and so on, honoring parents is not part of the list. So why would Yaakov be angry because his children did not honor him? They didn't have the obligation. Maybe it sounds nice to honor your parents, but certainly they were not obligated. So why would you be angry? This is what we're going to start delving into. From this story, that we're only going to go back to the story at the end of today's presentation, but from this story, the Rebbe is going to go directly into understanding the commandments of non-Jews. What's the message that Judaism, the Torah, etc. has for non-Jews? How is it actually built? Upon what? What's the foundation of that message? What does it mean? And I'm not talking about details. I'm not saying, can you kill this or that? No, no, no. We're not going to talk about the seven famous mitzvahs. I assume you know them. Because anyway, it's just seven details. Not so difficult to know them. And not so difficult to keep either. Just don't kill anybody. You know, it's okay. Don't kill your neighbor and you're fine. So let's go a step further. Let's go one more step. What's the basics of this? And by understanding what's behind all of this, we will see that it's not just seven things. There's a lot more, really a lot more. And what's the list of seven? Oh, okay. So let's start understanding all of this. First of all, honoring parents. Should they, the non-Jews, honor the parents or not? Our sages tell us that at Mara was a place where the Jewish people actually went, one of the first places that they went when they left Egypt. Again, still non-Jews, but in the process of becoming Jews, because from the coming out of Egypt up to the giving of the Torah in Shavuos, 50 days after Pesach, which is going out of Egypt, basically that's the moment of the building of the Jewish people, of the Jewish nation and so on, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. Jews, Israelites, children of Israel, I don't know. The names to me are all the same. I know people are so strict with this name, that name, I don't care right now. everything is the same. Now, Judaism itself builds up in that particular time and like finishes building up in the giving of the Torah, where God chooses the Jewish nation and so on. Okay. Now, our sages tell us, and Rashi brings it in his commentary to the Torah, so it's like a known thing, a simple known thing, that the Jewish people were given the commandment of honoring the parents at Mara, right when they left Egypt. That means that before that time, they didn't have that commandment. In other words, there was no obligation of honoring parents. So we go back just a second. Again, Yaakov was angry because his children did not ask him permission to kill the whole Shechem. But why would you be angry if they don't have to? They don't have to ask permission. They don't owe you honor. Because honor, the obligation of honor, comes afterwards in time, many, many years later after Yaakov. Like 200 years after Yaakov. But having said that, we do find that Avraham Avinu did not honor his parent. When you see at the end of Parshas Lech Lecho, when Avraham Avinu leaves his father Terach, and the Torah says right at the end, it's literally, if I don't remember wrong, is the last verse of Parshas Lech Lecho, Vayomos Terach beHaran. Terach passed away in the place called Haran. And Rashi explains clearly, wait a second, Terach didn't really die at that time. He lived a lot more. But Avram left his father as an elderly person, etc. And still, it doesn't mean that Avram did not honor his parents. Like, it's not nice that you leave your parents when they really need you. Like, they were for you when you needed them, when you needed a diaper, when you needed food, and so on. And when they need you, you just leave. You just go away. That's not nice. So we don't want to say that Avram did that when he left his father as an elderly person. So what does the Torah say? Terach passed away. That's it. Forget it. He was a rasha. He was a wicked man, idolater, whatever. So he passed away. He was like a dead person. That's why Avram was able to leave. Even if Terach was alive, even though Terach was alive, Avram just left. And it was not a bad thing on Avram that he left his father old, because it was like that. Okay, but we do see from that small story that there is such a thing as honoring parents. If Terach would not have been dead, quote unquote, Avram should have stayed over there to help his father. He's an old person and so on. Why should he stay? Because you have to honor your parents. But Avram, wait a second, if Yaakov was not Jew, Avram was also not Jew. Not a Jew. So we do see certain things of honoring parents. And again, we find Yaakov was angry at Shimon and Levi for not honoring, not asking him. But wait a second, all of these guys, Avram, Yaakov, Shimon, Levi, Shechem, of course, were non-Jews. So are non-Jews really obligated to honor the parents or not? That's question number one. Question number two, tzedakah, charity. It's a similar question. It's not that this particular detail is related to Shechem and Yaakov. No, 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 no. It's just a different story, but same question. What's the question? Are non-Jews obligated on tzedakah or not? We do find Avram. Again, Avram Avinu, our forefather. The verse says, it's written over here, that Avram was so beloved by God. Why? Because he taught his, whatever, children and everybody that was with him, Lasis tzedakah u'mishpat. The Torah says to do tzedakah, which you translate usually righteousness, but the word says tzedakah, which means charity, and justice. And the Talmud says he used to teach his sons justice, that means mishpat, and his daughters, Avram, all the women with him, to do charity. So the Talmud says clearly that in this particular verse, when the Torah says tzedakah, it doesn't mean righteousness, it means charity. Tzedakah. So we see from here that God loved Avram a lot because he taught to do tzedakah. So apparently, Bnei Noach have such a thing of tzedakah, of charity, giving money to other people, to be simple. Tzedakah also has other forms, such as money. But let's not go with weird things. Let's just focus. Let's talk about money, whatever. It's just an example. And then the Rebbe brings another story. Sdom Yamoira, I don't know the names in English, whatever, two cities, Parshas Vayera, right after Parshas Lech Lecha. Of course, it's a known story. God decides to destroy completely Sodom and Gomorrah, and he saves Lot. Okay, it's a whole story. But why did God destroy Sodom and Gomorrah? Why was he so angry, so to speak, at these people? Because they didn't do tzedakah. And not only they didn't do tzedakah, they did not allow other people to do tzedakah. It's a whole long story that I'm not going to explain the whole story, just one detail. God definitely decided to destroy, like the drop that already brought, the, so to speak, the terrible consequences of destroying the city, etc. Why? Because there was a young girl that she saw a poor man in the street, and he was hungry, and she gave him her bread, a piece of bread. And when people of Sodom and Gomorrah saw that this girl helped somebody else, they put all around her body honey, and they let go the bees. And they just, the bees destroyed this girl. They ate her, whatever. They killed her. So we see clearly, wait a second, not only I'm not going to help anybody, I'm not going to allow anybody to help anybody else, and I'm going to punish you if you help somebody else. That's what happened in Sodom. And God said, no way. That's it. I'm going to destroy all these people. So we do see that again, Avram thought to do tzedakah, and God loved him for that. Sodom and Gomorrah were punished terribly with completely destroying them because they did tzedakah. But wait a second. Where do you find in the famous list of seven mitzvahs tzedakah? Seven commandments of Bnei Noach, non-Jews, and blah, blah, blah. Where do you find tzedakah? Nowhere. There's no such a thing. So again, same question as before. Where do you find that non-Jews have to honor parents in order to say that Yaakov was angry because they did not honor him, or Avraham Avinu was not faulty because he didn't honor his father because his father was like dead, or tzedakah, same thing. Where do you find that non-Jews have to do tzedakah, charity, help, and so on, to the point that God loved Avraham, who was a non-Jew, because he loved it, he was beloved because he did tzedakah, and God destroyed some Sodom and Gomorrah because they didn't do tzedakah. Why? Why? That's the questions. Those are the questions, so to speak, that fire the rest of the talk. Let's move. There's a famous, very famous argument between two huge sages. First is Rambam, Spain. Both lived in Spain. The Rambam Maimonides, he lived in the year 1000, around that, and Ramban lived like 150, 200 years afterwards, also in Spain. Ramban, Nachmanides, Moshe ben Maimon, this is the Rambam, and Moshe ben Nachman, that's the Ramban, two different sages. And basically, their argument is, what's the essence of the one of the seven commandments that we actually know this, the Talmud talks about this, what's the essence of the commandment of Dinim? Justice. Non-Jews are commanded by God not to do injustice. That's the real definition of the commandment. All of the commandments, if you pay attention, all of the commandments of the list of seven commandments, the way they are expressed in the Talmud is in a way of don't do this, don't do that, and so on. You're not allowed to, and so on. None of the commandments in the Talmud actually asks this. None of the commandments are actually go do this or go do that. No. I do know, I'm conscious that there are many, many lists around the world saying respect life, respect animals, respect the family. That's nice, but it's just like nice talk. Let's go to the sources. The sources only talk about prohibitions, what you're not allowed to do. Don't kill. Oh, respect life. Yeah, very nice. Don't kill. That's the way it's written. Don't kill. And so on. What about dinim? What about justice? The way it is actually written, and the Talmud discusses this, and it says it clearly, don't do injustice. Don't have a lack of justice, so to speak. Now, the Rambam, when he defines in his Laws of Kings, chapter 9, if I'm not mistaken, the laws of dinim, he says basically this, put judges and policemen in every settlement to judge the seven commandments. So what's the role of the system of justice? That when a person transgresses one of the seven commandments, has to be judged by a group of non-Jews, like non-Jews for non-Jews, judging non-Jews, no problem. They can consult a rabbi or whatever, but it's a group of judges and policemen and so on, non-Jews. Judging what? Judging the seven commandments. That's it. And the Rambam says clearly, like, you can turn around things and start playing with his texts, but the truth is, he says clearly, non-Jews are not obligated in tzedakah. Why? How do you know that? Because the Rambam says, if a non-Jew wants to keep one of the commandments of the Jews in order to receive a reward, like, for instance, he gives an example. Which commandments of Jews that you're not obligated to, can you want to, can you will fulfill? Can you want to fulfill? Tzedakah, says the Rambam. Oh, so clearly, for the Rambam, tzedakah is not an obligation for non-Jews. That's clear. That's the way the Rambam understands. And then you go to the Ramban. The Ramban says has a very interesting comment in this whole story, Parshas Vayishlach of Dinah and Shechem, Shimon and Levi and so on, long comment, where he argues with the Rambam. He calls his the master, my master. How, they didn't know each other, but however, he still argues with him with a lot of respect, but argues with him and says, no, I don't agree to this. When the Torah tells the non-Jews to have a system of justice and judges and policemen and so on, it's not just to judge the seven commandments, the seven laws of Bnei Noach and so on. No, this includes everything, and the Ramban, Nachmanides, brings quite a long list, like 5-7 things of different laws between man and his fellow. And the laws, and he says this clearly, the laws, the way they are given to Jews, when he talks about things of man, between man and his fellow, are the same laws for non-Jews. It's the same thing, says the Ramban, clearly. That's justice, so to speak. Judge the people, the non-Jews, the same way you would judge the Jews. According to this, now we can understand why Sdomi and Amoira, let's go back a second, Sdomi and Amoira were punished terribly for not doing tzedakah, not doing charity. Why? Because the whole idea of charity, tzedakah, is based on Yishuvoi Sheloilam. That's the words used basically by the Rebbe, and it's a famous expression. Settling the world. Make a world that people can live in. A just world, a righteous world, a nice world, respect each other, love each other, and so on. Okay? That's the message, says the Ramban, that the Torah wants to give to non-Jews. And we'll see in a minute, that's the role actually of non-Jews. In a minute, we'll see this. Now, Sdom and Amoira were two places basically that they were against Yishuv Sheloilam, against settling the world. Here we have a girl, she has pity on somebody with hunger, and she gives him a piece of bread, and suddenly you have to kill her? What are you talking about? You have to kill this person because she shared her bread with somebody else? You're nuts. You're against settling the world. You're against having a nice place to live. Therefore, you have to die. That's it. As we're going to see in a minute. Chat, bear with me. So, according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, Bnei Noach, non-Jews, are obligated in tzedakah. According to the Rambam, Maimonides, they're not obligated in tzedakah, as I explained before. That's the example he gives when saying, if you want to do more than you're obligated to, go do tzedakah. But you're not obligated. The Ramban says, no way. They are obligated. Why? Because tzedakah, you can use many different names for tzedakah. Let's call it social justice. I'm not particularly communist. Not at all. Communism did a lot of damage to the Jewish people for many, many years. So I'm not communist. I'm not going to talk about politics either. Forget it. Not my department. But certainly social justice includes that we can help poor people. For whatever reason, they're poor. I don't know why. It's not my problem, it's God's problem. But they're poor, that's the reality. So go help them. Go help them. That doesn't mean give them everything. That doesn't mean create people that don't know how to work and how to manage life. No, 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 no. That's already communism. I don't care. Just whatever. Again, no politics. The point is, go help. That's part of a healthy society. Okay, that's good. So Ramban says, according to this, because tzedakah is part of settling the world, so they know I have to do tzedakah, for sure. This is the famous argument. So you see something already interesting, how the Torah actually works, the minds of the rabbis that do laws and so on. How does it work? Here we have two huge sages, Rambam and Ramban. They didn't know each other. They didn't see each other. And they argue about one particular thing, justice. How is the justice the Torah gives for non-Jews to go and keep? And according to the argument between these two guys, let's try to find out how they hold in other things that are not necessarily related directly to justice. What's justice? You see a person stealing a something from somebody else in the street. He hits somebody and takes the phone and runs away. Okay, wait a second. We have to apply justice. Let's see. Let's call witnesses. Did you see this guy actually stealing? Yes, we saw him. And do you have the objects? Yes, I have them. Do you belong to you? Yes. So, okay. You stole. So we apply justice. We put you in jail or whatever. In Torah, there's no such a thing as jail. The truth is as death punishment, according to the Torah, for non-Jews. But that's a different issue that we're going to see in a minute also. The point is that we see from a discussion, an argument about justice, how they would hold about tzedakah, a different subject, a different thing. And the same will apply to honoring parents. We will see in a few minutes. So this is the argument between the Rambam and the Ramban. Let's move on. In order to understand really why they argue and what's the whole point of the argument, and the truth is, the Rebbe goes into what's the whole point of the message of Judaism for non-Jews. What is it based on? What's behind it? And according to that, you can apply that to everything else in life, so to speak. So, okay, what's the role of non-Jews? The Rebbe writes like this: in order to ensure that the world remains a proper environment for Israel and the Torah, I assume that you read the text. The text brings other ideas. What are the other ideas? Basically, Breishis bar Elokim v'shamayim v'sarz. The first verse of the Torah says, in the beginning, bad translation, but in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And if you actually look at Rashi's commentary, which is a famous one, it's in English also and so on, you will see that Rashi brings that there's a reason why God created the world. What's the reason? The reason why God created the world is for the Jewish people to fulfill Torah and mitzvahs. That's why God created the world. Now, with that in mind, let's see again. In order to ensure that the world remains a proper environment for Israel, for Jewish people, and the Torah, that means Jewish people to fulfill, to observe the mitzvahs of the Torah without negative influences, but rather as a refined and perfect world, so we need a lot of people actually keeping seven commandments and the ramifications and so on. But basically, seven commandments. So what's the role of non-Jews? The role of non-Jews is, let's make a just society. Let's make a good place to live. So to speak, my words, not the Rebbe's, let's make a Gan Eden over here. Let's make it like a paradise over here. So everybody's happy and everybody can actually live properly and nobody bothers no one else and so on. That's the role of non-Jews. To prepare the world in a different place, the Rebbe says in the same talk, to prepare the world so that the Jewish people can properly fulfill their mission of Torah mitzvahs. So that's the role of the non-Jews in the world. What's the role of the Jews in the world? To fulfill the Torah mitzvahs, the 613 commandments. In other words, to bring godliness into this world. Okay, now that we understand what's behind, what's the message behind, again, the message of Judaism towards non-Jews, let's go see each one of these things that we're arguing about, honoring parents and tzedakah. Let's see, tzedakah. According to the Rambam, Okay, I got it. The non-Jews are not obligated in giving tzedakah. We know that. We don't know why the Rambam said that, but we do know that the Rambam said that. He wrote it. Having said that, why would Sodom and Gomorrah be punished because they didn't do tzedakah? If you're not obligated, you can't punish for something that is not an obligation. So according to the Rambam, we don't understand. Again, Maimonides is the Rambam. We don't understand why the non-Jews were actually punished for not doing tzedakah. And the Rebbe writes something very interesting. When the situation of, this is a verse, that's why it's in quotes. When the situation of they did not strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy, they didn't do tzedakah, they didn't help, reaches such an extreme. What's the extreme? Of killing a person because she did tzedakah, where they do not only refrain from giving charity themselves, but also prevent others from doing so. They killed her. And even go so far as to sentence those who give charity to death. Such a behavior is certainly a grave sin. That's how the Rebbe understands, according to the view of the Rambam, Maimonides, that says that non-Jews are not obligated in giving tzedakah. However, Sodom and Gomorrah were punished because they didn't do tzedakah. What's the explanation? It was so terrible what they did. They went against the same reason why they were created. Not only you don't want to do good deeds, you're not allowing other people to do good deeds. So why do you exist? What's the reason why you exist? Again, I know I'm repeating, but I wanted to make the point clear. The only reason why you exist is to prepare the world and have a nice world in order to bring godliness into the world. Okay, you prepare the ground, so to speak, and somebody else is going to bring the godliness, the Jews, whatever. That's fine, but you have to prepare the ground. Otherwise, it's not going to follow. It's not going to function, so to speak. Suppose you plant a seed in a place that is not worked and it's not ready to grow and so on, it's not going to grow. So you have to prepare the ground, you have to, whatever, have the minerals and the fertilizers and so on. Then you plant the seed and then it's going to grow. Fine. So in a situation, according to the view of the Rambam, Maimonides, in a situation in which not only you're not preparing the world, but you're going against it. You're destroying whatever everybody else seeds, plants and seeds and so on. Sows, I think the word is the verb is sows or whatever. When you destroy the world, of course, you lost the reason why you exist. And the Rebbe brings in a different place, not in this talk. I think it's in a different talk. I don't remember right now. Oh, maybe it's this one. Why are all the punishments for non-Jews, according to the Torah, this doesn't apply today, but the idea, of course, is eternal. The Torah is eternal. Why is the only punishment for non-Jews, according to the Torah, pe death penalty? Anything you do wrong, death penalty. Wait a second. If a Jew steals, there's no death penalty. You have to go back what you stole, and maybe the double or whatever, but no death penalty. If a non-Jew steals, death penalty. Why? Why? So according to what we learned before, this idea of the comparison between Bnei Noach and Jews, what's the role they have in life? If they, again, the whole reason why you exist is to make a nice world for people to live, and you're stealing, you're going against the same reason why you exist. So look at it in a different angle. I know I'm turning things, but it's not just changing the words so it sounds nicely. No. Think about it. Think about it. The reason why you exist is to have a nice world. You went against having a nice world because you stole. You lost the reason why you exist. So it's not that the Torah is punishing you. No, you didn't get it. You auto-punished yourself. You lost the reason why you exist. You yourself, you did it to yourself. The automatic result of that, what is? Death penalty. It's not that somebody's coming and punishing you. Why do you punish me so harsh? It's not so terrible. Jews don't, if they do this, it's not so terrible. Wait a second. It's not a punishment. It's an automatic result out of losing the reason why you exist. According to this, we understand why the Rambam, I'm sorry, we understand why the Rambam agrees that Sodom and Gomorrah were punished because they didn't do tzedakah, even though non-Jews are not obligated, because it was a very extreme case. of killing somebody because he helped. She helped, actually, somebody else. Now, this, the Rebbe doesn't discuss it, but still we don't understand what would the Rambam say about non-Jews honoring parents. It's not so clear. And to be honest, what is this? Just a second. The Rebbe brings in a note, it's a very interesting note. I have to find it. Where is it? Okay. The Rebbe brings in a note from Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch, it's literally the book of education. It was written, the name is not really known. People assume that Rev Aharon HaLevi wrote it in Barcelona, in Spain, year 1300s, but we don't really know the name of the author. And when he discusses the commandment 33, the mitzvah 33, which is honoring parents, he says the following words. Why should you honor your parents? Like, okay, explain to me why. And he says like this, very simple. Look, you're actually giving back something that they gave you. They took care of you. They gave you food. They gave you education. They gave whatever, all the things that they gave you. The less rational and normal thing you can do is give it back. You're actually paying back what you owe them. So that would make it a very rational thing to do, to honor parents. Now, would the Rambam agree, Maimonides, agree that Bnei Noach are obligated in all rational commandments? I don't know. He doesn't say it. The Rambam doesn't say this. Even though he was a very rational person, and actually if you read the Guide for Perplexed, Moir Nevuchim, it's a very philosophical and rational book, very nice, but I don't know what the Rambam would say, and as far as I know, nobody knows what the Rambam would say about this idea of keeping commandments of for Bnei Noach, I'm talking about non-Jews, because they make sense, like honoring parents. We don't know what the Rambam would say, but at least we understand why the Rambam agrees that Sdom and Amora were punished because of not doing tzedakah, even though they're not obligated, because it was too extreme. But according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, it's much easier to understand. Really easier. Why? Because Nachmanides clearly says in his commentary to the Torah that non-Jews are obligated in all rational commandments. Therefore, automatically, they are obligated in tzedakah. They are obligated in honoring parents. Because, again, that's a rational thing. Paying back your obligation towards your parents, and of course, settling the world. And the Ramban also says this clearly, Nachmanides. The role of non-Jews is to settle the world. So what do we have right now? Let's go back. This is basically the end. Yes. Regarding the mitzvah of honoring parents, going back to the beginning, to the story, so to speak, Shimon and Levi, from their perspective, they should have honored Yaakov. And they should have asked their father, Tati, can we go kill everybody? And probably Yaakov would have said, yes, go kill everybody. But whatever Yaakov's problem is, they should have asked. And they didn't do it. And they were obligated to do that, according to the Ramban at least. For sure, they were obligated. And it's a settling the world, and it's a rational thing. Why didn't they do it? So the Rebbe explains that the reason why they didn't ask is because they were so angry. This touched them so much to the deepest part of their souls that Dina was abducted and violated and this whole thing, to the point that when Yaakov actually asks his children, why did you do this? They answered just one thing. And like this is difficult to explain. When you read the Torah, there are different chants that a person sings, so to speak, when you read the Torah. And according to the way you sing it, it gives a strong meaning to the words that you're actually saying. The way you sing when you actually read the answer that Shimon and Levi gave to Yaakov is like a strong thing. Hey, our sister is going to be like a harlot, like you can do whatever you want with her. they like scream back to Yaakov. Yaakov is asking, hey, why did you do this? And they scream back. And they were 13 years old, okay? Hey, what are you saying? What are you saying? It's our sister. You can't do whatever you want with the sister. And Yaakov doesn't answer anything. He just shuts up. That's it. Conversation over. And they scream it back, like really strong. So this touched them so much that when something touches you so deeply, there's no room to ask. Like, can I do this? Can I do that? There's no rationale over here. That's point number one. That's why they didn't ask Yaakov, even though this is the whole point that the Rebbe is bringing out. They had to ask. The proper behavior would have been to ask, because we do owe honor to our parents. Non-Jews also own honor to their parents. Even if they don't behave so well, I hope you understand, like sometimes a person becomes a Ben Noyach, a Bas Noyach, and says there's only one God, and the parents continue thinking in five gods and 10 gods or whatever. Do I have to respect my father? He thinks there are 10 gods around. Yeah, you still have to respect your father. You don't have to go do idolatry with him, but or with her, whatever. But you have to respect, definitely, the parents. Now, another point that the Rebbe brings, which is interesting. Okay, but they decided to kill everybody. Why did they kill everybody? There are different explanations about this. The Rambam himself offers an explanation that the people of Shechem, they covered, so to speak, what their leader did, that was also called Shechem, that he abducted and violated and so on. So because they did not do justice with him, they covered actually after him, so everybody was liable of death penalty. That's the explanation that the Rambam brings. The Ramban, Nachmanides, brings another explanation. They were idolaters. They had other sins, other problems. And anyway, they had to be killed. Anyway, not because of this. Anyway, they had to be killed. Other problems. But with this, we understand at least the attitude of Shimon and Levi. And the conclusion of this is, okay, non-Jews, the message of Judaism to non-Jews is, you have to honor your parents. Shimon and Levi didn't do it, and Yaakov was actually very angry. Yeah, it's okay. But it was a very critical situation, so to speak. This touched them so much, they couldn't ask. They didn't have the clarity of mind, so to speak, to go ask their father, can we kill everybody else? That's from the perspective of Shimon and Levi. From the perspective of Yaakov, Yaakov was angry, yeah. But he was afraid also, because everybody else, that's actually what he says, everybody else is going to come and kill us and so on. So he was afraid, he was angry, and he didn't realize how deep this went into Shimon and Levi. Their sister. And at the end of the story, God actually helped. Because for Shimon and Levi, two very young boys, 13 years old, already they killed everybody else. God was already there helping, and for sure was a proper attitude. Now, again, as I mentioned before, this is quite a long explanation that the Rebbe offers with many, many details that I jumped. I just wanted to explain basically what's the message, so to speak, behind the explanation of the Rebbe. Message number one, I didn't write it down, but message number one is, okay, there's a role for non-Jews in the world. It's a pretty defined and clear role. You have to settle the world. You have to, and actually, if you go deeper into this, if you go to Parshas Vayera, by the end of Parshas Vayera, you see the Tower of Babel. They made a whole tower, a tall tower, whatever, and I'm trying to be precise with the words because I don't want to spoil what I want to say. But they made a whole tall tower, and God went down to see what's going on, what they're doing. And God said, wait a second, I'm not going to allow this. So he confused the language of the people, and they just couldn't work together, and everybody went to a different place. Nice, very good, interesting. What was the problem? What was the problem? They want to make a tower. How many towers do we have around the world? Like very tall towers. And God is not coming down to see what's going on. So what's the problem? one of the explanations of the problem of the people of the Tower of Babel and why God says, no way, I cannot allow these people to do this, is because they wanted to be everybody in the same city. They wanted to live everybody together. And actually, and Rashi says, it brings it down in his commentary, they actually, everybody spoke Hebrew at that time. Lashon Kodesh, holy language, whatever. And they wanted to be in fraternity, how do you say it? They wanted to be together, they wanted to be lovely society. We are living everybody together. And that's not what God wanted. God wants the world to be inhabited, to be a place where people actually live. In other words, this idea that I just shared comes from the Ibn Ezra. He says this idea. It's very interesting. And God wants everybody to live in different places. The whole world should be filled with people. And I'm adding this. The Ibn Ezra doesn't say this clearly. It's a different type of book. But God wants his presence to be everywhere. And when a person is in whatever place in the world he, she is found and keeps the commandments and tries to be a holy person and so on, you're bringing down godliness into the world. Definitely. Okay, we can argue Jew, non-Jew, the level of godliness you bring down because you're a Jew or you're a non-Jew. Okay, that's a different argument. Go talk to a Mekubal, somebody that knows Kabbalah, and is going to explain to you which level of godliness are you talking about? I don't care. Does God want me to be a good guy? Yes. But I'm not a Jew. I don't care. You have to be a good guy. That's your role in life. And what does it mean to be a good guy? Okay, wait a second. Let's sit down. Let's open the books and let's start learning. And you will see what God wants from a Jew and from a non-Jew and how to be a good guy and so on. That's a different story. But definitely God wants you to be a good person and to make this world a nice dwelling place for everybody to live and for him, for God, to live in this place. Definitely. And the people in the times of the Tower of Babel, of Babylon Tower, at the end of Parshas Vayera, they wanted to leave everybody together. And what about the rest of the world? I don't care. We're all together. That's why they made a whole very tall place, building, whatever, so everybody would know where to go. You could see this place from far because it was a tall place. So you know where you have to go. Where are the people? Where do they live? Let's go to this place. God said, no way. I don't want this. I want the whole world to be with people. So God says, I'm not going to allow this. And he destroyed them, whatever. And everybody right now, it's in different place. I'm in Argentina and Europe, whatever you are. Okay, that's fine. That's what God wants. Got it. That's why you have all kinds of people in all kinds of places and so on. So God doesn't want us to be all together in one place. I got it. So you have to. The role of non-Jews in the world is to actually live in the whole world, and Jews also are also in most of the places of the whole world, and you have to make the world a good place to bring down the godliness, to bring down godliness into the world. That's the role. That's the role. That's the foundation, so to speak, of the message the Rebbe is giving. On top of that foundation, we find that there are 7 commandments that clearly mean to do a good world. Don't kill, don't steal, and the wife of the neighbor is not for you, and so on. But then there's more. What do you mean there's more? Yeah. The Talmud says clearly, the list of 7 commandments is just a don't do's. Don't do this, don't do that, and so on, as I explained before. But then there's do's. Do this and do that. A very simple example that even the Talmud says it, fear of God. Whatever that means, levels of fearing of God, I'm not going to go into the details, but that's one of the mitzvahs. And if you ask the Ramban, wait a second, he has a whole list, like a long list of things. You can't cheat in business, and you have to do tzedakah, you have to honor your parents. Furthermore, anything that makes sense in a normal human mind, you have to do it. Be a good person, definitely. So with this, like the way I understand it, the Rebbe is opening basically our minds into seeing the role of non-Jews, and it's not directly talking about this, but of Jews also in other places it talks about that, but in this particular place, no. The Rebbe is opening our minds to understand the role of non-Jews in the world in a different way. in a very different way. You don't leave because your parents made a mistake and there you are. No. You have a role that God chose you, each one of us, to have a specific mission and role in His world, that we have to make this world the place that where He wants to be, and a place where we can all live together in order to accomplish this objective of creation. Okay, I received a few questions. I don't know if you have particular questions, but just a second. I received a few questions that I found interesting. So if it's okay with you, let's talk about these questions. Question number one, which is, question number one, what is the difference between the Rambam, Maimonides, and the Ramban, Nachmanides, regarding the obligation of honoring parents? The Rambam, Maimonides, doesn't really talk about it. We don't know. And the Ramban would definitely tell you the same thing that a Jew has to do for the parents, for his parents, or her, whatever, it's the same thing. Non-Jews have to do for their parents, definitely. Whatever, let me put it in different words. Definitely, no doubt, whatever a normal society thinks, holds, that a person has to do for the benefit of parents, you have to do it, definitely. And not just, oh, because I'm a normal person, I'm a good guy. No, you didn't get it. The Torah obligates you to behave that way. Definitely. That's what the Ramban would say. Question number two, on a practical level, what are the differences between the obligation of honoring parents for Jews? Okay, that's the obvious next question. And the difference between Jews and non-Jews. For instance, Jews, to honor parents, you have to give them food and give them clothes. It's a whole list in the Talmud itself, in the Shulchan Aruch itself, etc. Now, would non-Jews be obligated to that? I would have to find the source that says yes. But as I explained before, anything that normal people in a normal society would think you have to do for your parents, what do I mean? Non-Jews have to do it. What do I mean? Let's say I'm making this up, okay? So nobody please get offended. Let's say in Indonesia, I don't know, in order to honor your parents, you have to hit them twice a day in the face, like puff, puff, twice a day. Okay, wait a second. Maybe that's interesting culture in Indonesia, but I don't think the rest of the world thinks that's right. That's right, and it's not nice. So don't do it. Please don't do it. No, but Indonesia, I don't know, maybe if you live there and your parents are expecting you to hit them twice a day, okay, maybe we can argue, okay, go do it. But certainly in Argentina, that's not the way to behave. Definitely not. So don't do it, please. No, but Indonesia, they do it. I don't care. No. Of course, stupid example, but I'm trying to make the point of whatever normal people would think you have to do for your parents, you're obligated by the Torah, the Ramban says definitely, to do it. Question number three. How does the observance of Noahide mitzvahs by non-Jews support the unique mission of the Jewish people by making a nice world? Imagine, so many different stories. Imagine the times of, the truth is, on top of the Jewish people, all the great nations of the world, they stepped on top of us. And they tried to destroy us in many different ways. And they couldn't. Why? Because the reason why God created the world is for us to bring Him down into this world. And that's what He wants. And nobody can actually change His will. You can kill me, but that's not going to change God's will. So, if you look at the story of the world, of humanity, etc., you will find enough examples of different nations trying to destroy the Jewish people. The Egyptians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Crusades, the whatever, Cossacks, the communism, you name it, all of them wanted to destroy the Jewish people, and they couldn't. So, taking that in a opposite example, go to the other extreme. How does the observance of Noahide mitzvahs by non-Jews support? Of course, if you behave like a mensch, like a good person, that definitely supports and helps. Definitely. Definitely. Four, if the purpose of the seven Noahide laws is primarily to ensure that Jews can fulfill their divine mission properly, why do non-Jews exist at all? It's a very difficult to answer question. I'll answer, but it's a tough question. Wouldn't it be easier for the Jewish people to accomplish their task without them? Okay. Simple, but it's not really the answer, okay? But let's go step by step. Simple answer. Look, how many Jews are there in the world? 15 million, 14, 15 million, not more than that. That's a very, very small amount of people, human beings, bodies, and so on, to actually take care of the whole world. It's impossible. It's impossible. The world is, Baruch Hashem, pretty big. So you need a lot of people. This is a verse in Ishaya. I forgot the chapter, 40-something. God did not create the world to be destroyed, so to speak. Loi soyu, like soyu vavoyu in the beginning of the Torah. Loi soyu vera, God did not create the world to be inhabited or, I don't know how to say this, destroyed, whatever. Leshevez yitzara, God created the world to be with people, to be settled with people. So you need non-Jews to do that, definitely. You could argue, and this is actually the reason why this is not really the answer, you could argue, okay, so why don't you make more Jews? Go make more people, more Jews, and that's it. Fill the world. Okay, that could be. So I'm going to give you the answer that I found, not directly talking about this question, but it's an answer that has to be chewed, like when, you know, when the cow chews and chews and chews and then chews again and so on. So that's not something I can do because of my lack of knowledge in order to do that, but that's something that is written down. So what I'm going to share, I did not make it up. Somebody else wrote it. The Arizal wrote it. Likutei Torah le'Arizal, Psalm number 32. That's the source. And he writes like this. I'm going to read it to you inside. It's a very short thing anyway. When God created first man, this is the words of the Arizal. Sefer HaLikutim also found the same thing. When God created first man, all the souls were included within him. And there were only souls of Jewish people, of Jews. Neshamos Yisrael. Just that. That's the only thing that was, so to speak, available around when God created man. And if he would not have sinned, there wouldn't be such a thing as nations of the world. Point. This is what the Rizal writes. As I mentioned before, do you understand it? Rabbi, explain it to me. Forget it. You want me to explain to you, not because of you, because of me, what the Rizal says? You're nuts. I'm not the Rizal. I can read to you what the Rizal writes. Yeah, that I can do. Here it is. And I told you where it is, where it's found. But you want me to explain that? Forget it. No way. I can't. Because I don't know. It's my problem. My lack of knowledge. Now, having said that, the basic idea, it's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Why? We say, as I mentioned before, Bereishis bara Elokim hashamayim v'haaretz. Bad translation. Wrong translation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Wrong translation. But okay, I'm not dealing with that now. Proper, a better translation, the word Bereishis, and you can look at this in Rashi. Rashi has a whole long text on this word, just this word. The word Bereishis is basically, syntactically speaking, wrong. It's not the proper word. It should have said Barishoina, in the beginning. Or it should have said Bereishis Broi, in the beginning of creation. But it doesn't say that. It says Bereishis Bara. It says in the beginning of created. Of what? No, it doesn't say. So Rashi brings a Midrash. And if you actually look at the Ramban, he actually argues with Rashi on this. It's interesting to look at the Ramban also. But whatever. Rashi says that the true reading of the Torah, the beginning, the first verse, the first word actually of the first verse, should be base, the letter base, which means the word, the number two, base reishis, for two fundamental things. That's reishis, like a fundamental thing. But Elohim es Hashemayim v'Haaretz, God created the heavens and the earth. Oh, wait a second. It's a different thing now. There are two reasons, two very important things that are the reason why God created the whole world. And what are those two things? And this is the Midrash. And Rashi brings it. The Midrash says, Torah v'Israel, Jewish people and the Torah. And to take this to a further point, you could ask which one comes first, the Jewish people or the Torah? And Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer asks these questions, not my question. And he answers, and the answer is very simple. Look at the Torah. What does the Torah say? Daber el Bnei Israel, Tzavez Bnei Israel, go talk to the Jewish people, go command the Jewish people. So evidently the Jewish people were before, because the Torah is talking to them. So what does this mean? What's the meaning of this whole idea? So the new Jews, who cares? Because anyway, the world was created for the Jews. Again, look at the Arizal. The Arizal is saying, wait a second, at the point in the Torah that you're reading the first verse of the Torah, what is he talking about? Oy, what is he talking about even before the creation of the first man? Like the first day of creation, Bereishis, not even day one, whatever. The initial intention of God was to create only Jews. And when he created the first man, there were only Jews. Future to be, whatever, Jews. I don't know what that means. Okay, again, I can't explain the Arizal. I can just read it. But then, first man, he sinned. We know this. He ate from the fruit he didn't have to eat. And that gave room to other people, not just Jews, other people. You might ask, okay, so therefore, where are we, quote unquote, the non-Jews? Where are we? What are we and where are we and what's our role? And there's another discourse, Hasidic discourse, that to be honest is in the English YouTube channel. I had a whole class on this, which is a very interesting discourse in itself, that brings a very interesting idea. Before man, the first man, Adam HaRishon, before he sinned, he lived in Gan Eden, in the paradise. Very interesting place. Godliness, you can talk to God, you can hear God, and whatever they heard, I don't know. But the rest of the world, forget it. A place with, there's nobody over there, there's nothing over there. So man sinned, and he is actually kicked out of Gan Eden and sent to refine the world. So that means, in what I'm trying to convey, what I'm trying to say is, the reason why he actually was sent out is to fix what he did wrong, but in this fixing, he's actually elevating the whole world with him to God. Let's put it in different words to try to make my point a little bit clearer. Why are there non-Jews? Because that's the way you can really elevate every single millimeter of the world, including human beings, to God. If there were, suppose, in story you can't say, it happened already. You can't say, if the French Revolution wouldn't have happened, where would we be today? I don't know, who cares? It happened already. So it's a stupid question. But having said that, if the first man wouldn't have eaten from the fruit and so on, there wouldn't be non-Jews. But that doesn't mean you wouldn't exist. Ah, you, nothing. No, it means everybody would have been Jew. It doesn't mean you don't exist. It means you would have existed in a different realm, in a different way. Would that be good or bad? I have no idea. It's, again, what about if Napoleon didn't exist? I don't care. He existed. That's it. Like it or not, that it's story. Happened. You can ask what comes out of that. Okay, fine. But you can't say if it wouldn't exist. I don't know. I don't care. But the point I'm trying to make is, don't ever think non-Jews are something not important in the creation. Because definitely, if that would be the case, they wouldn't exist. And they do exist. God doesn't do anything that doesn't have an importance in his creation. Every single creature, every single part of the creation, it's important, and it was created in order to give honor to God. Definitely. Definitely. You can ask about the role. Okay, that's a good question. Not so much why am I here? Rather, what is expected of me? That you can ask. That's a good question. Why are you here? I'll explain to you, your father, your mother, you know, and that's where you are. So it's not a good answer. So why is not a good answer? Because it's not a good question either. The question is, what's expected from me? What does God want from me? That's the real question. And of course, when you get the answer, you go do it. Just go do it. Take care of it and go do what's expected of you.